Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is a simple prescription for a wonderful life. And numbers to call, because I'm actually here, it's not a recording, it's me, are 1-866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, that's 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show by dialing your country code, followed by 760-918-4300. And as always, I'll set the table and talk a bit about our topic before we get started. One of the things that, let me share a story. I went to visit an extremely wealthy potential client. Let me put it that way. And it was, there was a lot of rigmarole and security involved in my getting to see them. And it was all sort of set up like this huge deal. And unfortunately, I kind of in my head was like, oh, I guess it's a big deal, right? I better take this seriously. And I'm never going to be at my best, in the same way as none of us are at our best when we've got a lot of thinking in our head about how important something is and how much it needs to work. But, you know, I've been doing this for a while, so I was all right. I went in and I met with this woman, and we talked for a while, and she was telling me what she wanted coaching about, and, you know, the kind of stuff we talk about on this show. It just was with this particular person. And at one point, she got so frustrated with the fact that I wouldn't tell her what to do that she started screaming at me, which I appreciate that you guys don't do, because I got headphones on and it would really hurt. And she started yelling and she said, "Just tell me what to do and I'll do it." Well, the reason that I don't tell people what to do is because that's the least, in most cases, I'll say that, that's the least useful thing somebody could do for you, is tell you what to do. Because A, there's a pretty good chance they're wrong, because how would they know, unless it's something very tangible and very specific and almost mathematical, like turn left and you'll get to that street. And B, even if they're right, it just reinforces the idea that you don't have access to that deeper wisdom, to that deeper guidance, to that inner trust. I'm not saying that if your guidance says to you, hey, go ask this person, go find out from this person, that you don't do it because, oh, no, we're not supposed to, the prescription is, I'm not supposed to ask anyone for any advice. It's just recognizing that the problem with advice, and I've said this before, the problem with advice is, when you really need it, you can't hear it. And when you'd be open enough and clear enough to hear it, you don't need it. And so the reason I wanted to come have my comeback show, having been off for a month, and thank you for those of you who sent messages on Facebook at facebook.com/mneal and sent me messages on Twitter, Michael_Neal, and sent me emails. Those of you who have email for me, you can always email radio@supercoach.com and get a message to me that way as well. You know, I'm glad you missed me. I missed you too. But one of the things that, you know, I thought about is, you know, it's not 100% true that there's nothing to do, even though we often say, well, no, you don't do anything. And I wanted to tell you a little story. And after the story, I'm going to go to the phones. Numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S., dial your country code, followed by 760-918-4300, and I'll get to your calls in just a couple minutes. One of the things that floats around in the Three Principles community, those of you who've read The Inside Out Revolution, and if you haven't, pick up a copy today, but those of you who've read The Inside Out Revolution know that it's a lot of the ideas that we talk about on the show, these three principles that I talk about, mind, consciousness, and thought, the origin of that particular languaging came from a guy named Sid Banks, who is a Scottish welder who had an Enlightenment experience. And based on his teaching, some other people, George Pransky, Roger Mills, Elsie Spittle, came along and learned from Sid and created what's sort of now known as the Principles Community. And those of you, by the way, in the Midwest or in the United States who are willing to travel, the Three Principles Global Community Conference, which was the first big Three Principles Conference in America in a few years, actually begins today. It probably has begun in Minneapolis, and I will be joining you all there. I know there's a few hundred of you already headed out that way or already there on Saturday. I'm flying through the night on Friday so that I can join you there on Saturday. And you can learn more about that at 3pgc.org, Three Principles Global Community, 3pgc.org. I digress. So it comes from the work of this guy, Sid Banks. And one of the things that Sid Banks is famous for saying is, do nothing. Like, that's one of the quotes that's always attributed. Well, how do I get better? Do nothing. And people hear that and think that's a prescription. Like, oh, okay, I'm not supposed to do anything, but I want to do something. I mean, there's, and people get very frustrated and very confused and very caught up in that idea of do nothing. And I think it's really useful to know that there was a full quote around that. Best I've seen, Sid never actually said do nothing. What Sid said was, look in a direction and do nothing. If you want to evolve spiritually, look in a direction and do nothing. If you want to get insight, fresh thinking about a situation in your work or your relationship or your life, look in a direction and do nothing. If you want to get reinvigorated, to reconnect to your innate health and your innate well-being, to find your natural energy, look in a direction and do nothing. And now, I have to say, when I first heard that, that made more sense than just do nothing. But nobody seemed to want to tell me or be able to tell me which direction specifically am I supposed to look. And I'll answer that question both metaphorically and specifically. So let me do metaphorically first, okay? Let's say that you want to spot the yellow-bellied woodpecker, which is a very, there probably is a bird named a yellow-bellied woodpecker. I doubt I just pulled that out of my hat. But yeah, let's say that that's a bird that's very rare to see. And so I'm going to be your guide. And now I happen to know the trees that the yellow-bellied woodpeckers like to hang out in. So if I'm going to help you find the yellow-bellied woodpecker, what I'm going to do is I'm going to point in a direction. I'm going to point in the direction of the tree where they hang out. Now, that doesn't mean just because I'm pointing in that direction that that's where you look at first, because you might go, well, but I've heard the yellow-bellied woodpeckers are over this way. And why are you telling me to look there? I mean, what if one's over there? And you might have all your reasons why you should look in a different direction. Well, other people told me that it's over here, and this book said this, and this guru said this. All I can do as your coach, as your woodpecker discovery guide, is point in the direction of the trees where the woodpeckers tend to hang out. And after that, there's nothing for you to do except look in that direction. And at some point, if you keep looking in that direction and there really are woodpeckers there, you're liable to see them. Now, let me connect the dots just so you don't think I'm completely random. When somebody comes and they say, I just can't seem to get a fresh thought about this. I'm just really stuck in this behavioral pattern. I'm just really stuck in this relationship pattern. The one place where almost no one has thought to look is towards the unknown. And I'm going to talk about this in a bunch of different ways. So the direction to look in is towards the unknown. It's not towards which advice is best, because those are both known, right? Whether it's this advice or this advice, those are both already formed ideas. It's not what I've done in the past that worked or the opposite of what I'd done in the past that didn't work, because those are both already existent ideas. The place to look isn't in the database of your memory or the library of your self-help books. The place to look is towards the unknown. It's towards the mind where all these cool ideas and possibilities come up. And a story you've probably heard me tell if you listen to the show a lot, is at one point I said to one of my mentors, well, the way she put it is, I said, well, what direction is it I'm supposed to look in and do nothing? She said, well, look towards mind. And I said, well, I don't know where mind is. And she said, well, that's okay. Just look where you don't know where to look. And there's something about that willingness, the humility, you could say, that it takes to just hang out in not knowing longer. Most of us want to know. We want to know. We want to know now. We want to just tell me what to do and I'll do it. Well, sometimes you got to hang out in the unknown a bit longer. And in fact, what happens is most of us really aren't looking in the direction of the unknown. We're searching and searching and searching and searching, running around. It's like if there was a bus going to come along with the answer, instead of waiting at the bus stop, which is hanging out in the unknown, we run around chasing buses, hoping that we'll find the bus that has our answer on it. And then we say, but I've been trying to find the answer for months, for years, my entire life. But actually, you probably haven't spent that much time just hanging out at the bus stop, knowing that there's nothing you can do to make the bus come any quicker. But the bus will come, and your best chance of catching it is if you're hanging out in the unknown, if you're hanging out at the bus stop. I'm going to talk more about this prescription for a wonderful life later in the show, but for now, let's hit the phones and let's begin right here in Los Angeles with Cam. Hey, Cam, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, Michael. Can you hear me?
I can indeed.
Oh, wow. I'm so excited to be on the phone with you. I'm trying to just kind of slow my thoughts enough so I can hear what you're saying right now, because it seems like what you're saying right now has a lot of meaning for my question, which is about, precisely that habit that I would like to break. It's a food habit that I'm kind of uncomfortable with. I would love it if the experience for me could be, drinking the proverbial rat poison that you've used as an analogy before. That would make it so easy. Like, why would I drink rat poison? Why would I eat this thing? I'm kind of like that diabetic who needs to have like her chocolate every day or something like that. It can feel so like a requirement when in the aftermath, I feel like, okay, well, that wasn't a good idea. That wasn't the best idea. So I'm just kind of in a quandary as to why that experience is so persistent. If there is like an insight that I'm not seeing, because I feel like I see it. It's not good. It's not healthy.
Well, so now look, we can be, and it's okay. I obviously can't and won't force the issue, but is this something so hideous that speaking it aloud is like invoking the name of Voldemort in Harry Potter's universe? Or what is it that you eat or do?
Well, it's like a overeating situation that is not healthy.
Okay. So sometimes you eat too much. You eat past the full point.
Yes.
Oh my God. No. Okay. welcome to the human race, and B, let's talk about it. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Now, let me do a couple of just reality checks. Are you morbidly obese?
No.
No. Okay. So it isn't to the point where there is an immediate health risk because of it.
No.
Okay. No. I don't know if I would have said something different if the answer had been yes, but what that tells me is, okay, urgent and important as this feels to you, this isn't something that if it's not taken care of by the end of this call, you're going to be dead tomorrow.
That's correct.
Okay. So it's sometimes useful to remind ourselves of that. It's like, it annoys you that you do that. I got it. Right? It would be neat if you didn't do that anymore. I get that too.
Okay.
But no, I can hear it. And even the way you said, okay, it's like, no, you don't understand. You don't understand. I eat too much. I'm full and I keep going.
Yeah. It's annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, here's the, you want the bad news or the good news?
I'm sure they're, flip sides of the same coin.
Okay. So look, the bad news is that there will almost certainly be times between now and the end of your life where you will eat more than your body needed. Right? That no matter what we did, no matter what new thought you had, it's pretty unlikely, unless you move to like the remote desert or world famine kicks in tomorrow, that won't happen from time to time. So that's the bad news part. It's not, this isn't, people go, if only I didn't need to eat. Well, look, wrong planet. So So that's not on offer. Okay, that's the bad news.
Yeah, I can live with that.
Okay. Now, the good news is that as this becomes less of a big deal to you, it will change all by itself. And let me explain why. And then maybe we can talk about, if it's not obvious to you, how it becomes less of a big deal to you.
Yeah.
Okay. So think of, this is an analogy that came up in a, I was doing an intensive with a client the first couple of days of September, and this analogy came up from her. And I thought it was a really beautiful analogy. We were talking about the nature of thought. And the thing about thought, I don't mean thoughts. Like when you do an affirmation, that's a specific thought that you're putting in your head. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about thought, the raw material from which our thoughts come.
Yeah.
Whatever it is that thoughts are made of is thought. It's like jewelry or statuary, and it's all made, let's say it's all gold. So it's all gold statuary, gold jewelry, and then you can melt it down and you can build new statues and you can create new jewelry. But the raw material stays the same.
Yeah.
Right? Well, when we have a particularly persistent thought, you know, one that's so persistent that we think, no, this is real. This is a pattern. This is a thing. Then thought isn't flowing because it's become solid. So it's almost like you get this big, ugly statue of a ram and you've stuck it in the center of your kitchen. And so whenever you're in the kitchen, you kind of got to navigate around this big, ugly gold statue of a ram. Now, as soon as that statue melts back down, you'll start having new thoughts. You'll start having new ideas. You'll see things differently. I'm not saying you'll see your eating disorder differently, because the whole idea that it's an eating disorder, or however you would describe it, a bad health habit, that in and of itself will change. Now, I don't know what it will change to first. I don't know what the first new thought you'll have about it will be. I don't know whether it will be along the lines of, you know, actually, this isn't as big a deal as I thought. Or it might be along the lines of, this is a bigger deal than I thought, and I'm going to seek medical help immediately. Or it might be along the lines of completely forgetting about it and carrying on and just noticing later that you've stopped doing it. Or it might be along the lines of, oh my gosh, whenever I feel upset, I eat. You know, I don't know. I'm not saying any one of those things is relevant to you. But it won't be that same thought that you have every time. Oh my God, why did I do this? Why do I keep doing this? How am I going to stop doing this? Is this ever going to stop? What kind of a person does this? Et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Does that make sense?
I think that's such a beautiful picture. And I know enough. I love your book, by the way. And thank you so much for introducing, you know, the three principles to your readers and your listeners. I think it's like hanging out in the unknown is a great, I think, direction.
Mm.
I just don't always understand, like, for me, how that looks, because that thought that you just described about, oh my gosh, who is this person, or this is never going to stop, that's a very appropriate description of what I think.
So here's the thing. Here's where I can help you out. Even if you don't know what the unknown looks like, you know what the known looks like.
I do.
So not there.
Okay.
And if you just keep going not there, you're going to find the unknown.
Okay. I will use that then as my kind of marker then.
All right. Fantastic, Cam. And feel free to call back and let us know how you're getting on.
I will. Thank you so much, Michael.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
You know, it's such a funny thing, but it's true. I mean, we sit there. I mean, I was with this client for a few days, and for the first maybe day and a half, every time I would suggest something like hanging out in the unknown, she'd go, "Well, I don't know how to do that." And I would go, "Exactly," and she'd want to hit me. But we got there, because at some point you just get a little quieter on the inside, and you realize, oh, I actually spend parts of every day in the unknown. I spend parts of every day looking towards, you know, what's behind my experience, you know, looking towards spirit, looking towards the space out of which thought arises, looking towards mind or the nature of mind, thought and the nature of thought instead of the content of thought. You know, these are all different ways of pointing to the tree that has the woodpecker in it. Let's go to Dallas and let's talk with Lauren. Lauren, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi, we're going to talk about my relationship today.
Oh, goody.
Okay, so I think I've formed a question. And I feel, I guess, some urgency with this because I'm going through a period of transition in moving and whatnot. And I'm worried that if I look into the unknown and not make a choice or make the wrong choice, that other things in my life will fail, primarily materialistic type things, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, like, when do you no longer continue a relationship due to a past history of behavior? You know, and if we should, like, I guess it's kind of like my belief system that we should love and forgive, then, like, when is enough enough? You know, and when do you kind of like relinquish control of your partner learning those lessons? Or, you know what I mean?
Well, those are two different questions. So let me separate them out. The second question you ask, when do you relinquish control of your partner's behavior, is yesterday.
Okay.
Right. There is no point at which our attempts to control somebody's behavior beyond about the age of 3 are going to result in anything more mature than what happens when you try to control the behavior of someone under 3.
Right.
Right. The battle of the high chair carries on through life.
Totally.
You know, I'm going to make you eat those SpaghettiOs. No, you're not. You know, I'm going to make you be a good husband. No, I'm not. You know, I mean, that's never going to change. Right.
Yes.
So that bit's easy. Right. The sooner you let go of that, the better both of your experiences of life will be. Now, I'm not saying that just because you do that, he's going to change.
Now, when you say let go, now this, I guess, well, there's twofold to this. So by career, I'm a behavior changer. I'm a behavior analyst.
Okay.
So it's difficult for me. And then the other part is, you know, his choices affect me. We live together and it affects me and my daily routine. And, you know, there's just some difficulty. It just makes the relinquishing control so hard for me.
Well, what might make it easier is if you take a look and realize that you have no control anyways. You're not really relinquishing control. You're relinquishing the illusion of control. Right? I have teenage children. I don't know. Do you have kids?
No.
Okay. So I don't just have kids. I got teenagers. And so one of the things that became apparent to me, and I don't know how it became apparent to me, it just became apparent to me, is that we get along to a certain extent, and this is when things aren't going well. A lot of the time things are just, they just flow because of connection and mm-hmm. things like that. But when they aren't, we get along by something that the best analogy I can find is mutually assured destruction.
Right.
Okay. Right. It's like, yeah. It's like, I know I can force them to do certain things. And I know that the backlash of that will be beyond the whatever sullen attitude will be them beginning to lie to me, beginning to sneak around, beginning to do things, you know, that I find out about 20 years later. And that, you know, I can escalate and they can escalate. And ultimately we can get to the point where, you know, we both, you know, where the relationship is severed. So because we both kind of know that, even when things aren't smooth, we all kind of just know, you know, I'm not really controlling you. Now that doesn't mean we don't have rules. I mean, these are, you know, and it doesn't mean that there aren't consequences to breaking those rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is, so if I don't have control over my own children, the idea that I would have control over my partner without their permission, and if it's with their permission, it's not control, it's agreement, mm-hmm. is a funny idea. Now, what I'd like to do, if it's okay, Lauren, is we're coming up on a break. Can you hang out over the break?
Totally, yeah.
Okay, great. So we're going to come back to Mavis and control and relationships and all of that good stuff after this break. We're going to get to Diane and Z and Mavis and whoever else is on hold here. If you want to get in the second part of the show, the numbers to call are 866-254-1579. And you can also check us out on Facebook. Usually there's a little conversation going on at facebook.com/MNeil. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Are you ready for a change? Get on track.
760-918-4300.
1, 2, 3, hit it!
Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about a simple prescription for a wonderful life, which is about looking in a direction and doing nothing, and really beginning to see that the direction to look in is away from outside causality. This is another way of saying it. I know every time I say it, I'm saying it a little bit different, but that's deliberate because these are all different ways of pointing to this space inside of us, out of which new thought, new ideas, new possibilities emerge. And we're so conditioned culturally to look for the problem and solution to be outside of us. It's in this person's behavior. It's in that person's attitude. It's in this circumstance. It's in this pattern of my own behavior or thought. And when you step away from the outside-in notion that my experience of life is based on what's happening, and look towards the inside out, towards the fact that we live in an experience of thought, not an experience of the world. There's just no mechanism for us to experience the world except via thought. Then suddenly, we stay in that flow. Those gold statues get melted back down, and new things and new thoughts emerge. And we're speaking with Lauren, and we were speaking about the nature of control. So Lauren, let me check in with you. Does it seem right to you, or do I not get it when I say you don't really control someone else anyways?
No, you're absolutely, right. And I don't. And, he's asked for help on this. I mean, basically it's like a drinking issue, and it doesn't happen every night, but it happens enough to cause kind of a rift in the relationship. It happens a few times a month, and it disrupts sleep patterns for both of us, and, he's absolutely unreachable, and it's like he can't just have one, and he's asked for help on it, and, since December now, I've been trying to help him in the ways that I know as a, behavior analyst of, priming and reinforcing, little attempts to even get there and most of all support and love. And I just almost feel like I'm putting myself on the back burner and my knees.
I'd like to make an observation and tell a story that's going to sound completely random, but trust me, in my head, it's relevant.
Okay.
So first the observation, and the observation is just a general one, is generally speaking, the worst and least qualified person to help someone in an issue that affects a relationship is the person they're in relationship with.
Yeah.
And it's the same. If my wife and kids have issues, I'm not the best qualified person to help them, because inevitably I'm somehow a part of it. Not that it's my fault, not that it's any, but it's just messy.
Yeah.
So that would be my first, just an observation, is it would be so the exception to the rule if you were the one who was able to offer him the help that he wants and needs.
Right.
The love and support thing is great, but the specific behavioral interventionist type help, I have so rarely heard of that working within a relationship. Not saying it can't, saying it would be so the exception to the rule.
Right.
Okay. That's the observation part. Here's the story. I did a course once on sexuality. And one of the questions that I asked the group is, what constitutes unforgivable cheating? Okay. Now we got a range of answers from if they think about another man or woman to as long as they don't have multiple partners while they're supposed to be with me. I mean, it was that extreme. I mean, it was actually more extreme. I'm on public radio. I can't quite get into the details, but it was like the range, and there was everything in between. Now, what that pointed out to me and what I pointed out to the group is where we draw the line is personal and arbitrary. There is no real line. So knowing that you're not looking for a real answer, that you're going to be the one that makes up the answer of when is enough enough, is often helpful. Because again, it means you stop looking in the direction of what's the right answer. And you start to look within. You start to look towards that inner clarity, that inner knowing that we all have, but it's very easy for it to be obscured. Does that make sense?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and totally applies to it.
You know, and you know, absolutely no, you know, you're, you know, I'm sitting here kind of sending out as much love and warmth to you both as I can, because that's a difficult thing to go through.
Well, thank you. You know, and I feel it. And, you know, when you said that we live in the experience of thought, not in the experience of world, you know, it just kind of changed my perception. And I'm grateful to have this opportunity to talk this through with you.
Beautiful. Thank you, Lauren.
Thank you. Have a good one.
You too. You know, and this is life, gang. Right? I had an amazing opportunity over the when I take August off. Normally, you know, I go on a holiday, and this time I went with my daughter. We went to Laos and worked at some orphanages out there, and then we went when I got back, I took my son, and we went and spent some time in a maximum security prison in Northern California, talking to the inmates about the principles and about the inside out nature of reality. And one of the things that just was so apparent is that, you know, we all get caught up in the same kinds of thoughts. The people that were in there got more caught up than I do, right? When they had the thought, oh, that bastard, I'm going to kill him, they actually killed him. I'm not trying to make light of it. I'm not trying to make it okay. But I've had that thought. Now, for me, I had sufficient perspective on that thought that there was no way I was going to act on it. Somebody who doesn't understand that there's a night and day difference, a 180 degree difference between what goes on in your head and what you have to do with your body, they're going to get themselves into some messes. And the more clearly you start to see for yourself, I'm living it in the experience of my thinking. And as my thinking changes, my experience will change, the less inclined you are to try and make the world or the people in your world conform to the personal arbitrary ideas and ideals you've created in your mind. Let's go out to Falls Church, Virginia, because I've not been to Falls Church, Virginia, and let's talk with Z. Hey, Z, welcome. What are we going to talk about today?
I'm going to start. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
I started a business, and I've always wanted to own a restaurant since I was 12 years old.
What's your favorite thing? What's your favorite thing to make?
Everything.
Everything. So the everything. Best. So the best thing on the menu is everything.
Yeah, I mean everything. I think I was the one that started fusion cuisine in my kitchen like 40 years ago.
Well, for which I'm incredibly grateful. It's my favorite kind of food.
Yeah, I love cooking, and I make my own recipes, and usually people like them. It just happened I met this beautiful woman, and she's always passionate about cooking also. So I told her that I wanted to start a restaurant, but I didn't want to deal with the overhead and all of that. And so what about a food truck? And we're so close to Washington, D.C., and she was receptive to that. But then that's it. It has stopped. And I brought it up to her, and she seems to be very interested in it, but I don't know if I'm obsessing about this, if I'm being impatient. I do know she has a few things with her family on her plate right now, but I just don't know how to reapproach her about, let's get this thing moving, let's go look at trucks, let's go take classes and get certified, on and on. And I was just listening to the former caller, and she was talking about, you guys were talking about controlling, and I'm wondering if that's what I'm doing. The thoughts come to my mind to do this on my own, but anybody I talk with tells me that you really need at least two people on the truck, And so I was just like, well, what am I supposed to do? I feel stuck.
I hear it. And I can tell you where it seems to me that you're stuck is that you're trying to resolve a real world, and by real world, I mean an external world problem in your head. Real world, external world problems don't get resolved in our head. They get resolved in the real world, external world. And generally speaking, they get resolved through trial and error. So unless you're trying to, you know, get Apollo 13 back to Earth, you know, where there really is no margin for error. And that's one of the few situations in life where something like that is true. You're going to get it wrong. And so the sooner you get it wrong, the sooner you'll get it right. So you can think it through forever. But at some point, you're going to wind up having a conversation with her, and it's going to go well or it isn't, and it's going to result in her getting back interested or it's not. And at that point, you'll be able to make a, you know, make a call about, do I want to go ahead on my own? Do I want to find somebody else to go in with? Is she in? You know, right now, the reason you're stuck is because you're trying to find out what's ahead on the road without driving there.
You're right.
And that's all. You know, and look, we all do that from time to time. It just doesn't work. Is that clear enough?
Very, very Brilliant. Much so. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Z.
Okay. Bye.
Okay. And you know, I say this, gosh, I must say this phrase more than almost any other, you know, we all do this. I even did a show once called We All Do This. You know, it happens. It's incredibly normal to try and figure it out all in advance. And it just is incredibly inefficient. I remember worked with a wonderful coach a few years back named Steve Hardison. You can find out more about him at theultimatecoach.net. And he was probably the clearest man I have ever met about the way to resolve external world problems is in the external world. And I remember him once saying to me, and I think I may have shared this once on the show, that he said, if we were both tasked with fundraising $1 million for a project, he said, I would beat you every time. And he said, you're more networked than I am. You're more well-known than I am. He may have even said people like you more than they like me. But he said, I would still raise the money quicker than you every time, because by the time you were done thinking about your approach, I would have called the first 20 people. And sometimes it is that simple. Now, you know, you're dealing with something emotional, you're dealing with something philosophical, you're dealing with something theoretical. Well, that's going to resolve in mind. That's going to resolve through new thought. But, you know, you're trying to predict the future. Well, the best way to predict the future is to create it. And the way you create it is by living it. Let's go out to Ontario and let's talk with Mavis. Hey, Mavis, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today? Mavis, you still with us? All right, we're going to give Mavis
Hello. She is.
Hello.
Yeah. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for hanging out on hold for that long. I appreciate it.
I've been enjoying everybody else's story.
Oh, okay, great. So what are we going to talk about?
I feel like the lady you described at the introduction, like, somebody please come and tell me what the F to do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And I'm just wondering if you could help me get through that.
Great.
It is in terms of re-entering the working world. I have absolutely no idea what to do.
Okay.
And I don't know how to not know.
Well, you already do not know. You're just not comfortable not knowing.
Okay.
Your first sentence was, I don't know what to do. So you know how to not know.
Okay.
But let me put that to one side for a minute and just ask you a couple more questions. And then we'll come back to that, because that actually turns out to be key. Now, why are you getting back into the working world now?
I'm not working correctly.
Right.
I had some health issues, and then it was, you know, like PTSD, like trauma and all that. And I'm ready now. Plus, obviously, you know, like, you have to support yourself. And I'm completely at a loss of how to move forward.
Okay, so give me a, and again, there's a reason I'm sort of trying to create a little more, sure, more of a picture. So give me a sense of how much longer could you go without working before you'd be out on the street?
A couple of months.
Okay.
But okay. I also know, Michael, I also know that I would not let myself get there.
So what would you do before you got there?
I would not go there.
I understand. And I'm wondering, mm-hmm, I hear that and I believe that. And I'm wondering, how does somebody who thinks she doesn't know what to do know that she would find something to do before she got there?
Because I feel like I know I'm smart enough, I'm skilled enough, I have what it takes to, you know, turn this around. It's just that connection between that notion and the now is not clear.
Let me give you an example of something, and I want you to listen, just listen to it. Mm-hmm. And then tell me if it strikes you that there's a connection between the story that I tell and your situation.
Okay.
So I decided over this break that one of the projects that I was going to do was I was going to clear out my books. Now, I have well over 1,000 books,
mm-hmm,
the vast majority of which could or should have been published by Hay House. And unfortunately, I don't have shelf space for all of them. So if you had been to my office in July, you would have seen stacks of books on top of bookshelves, on the floor, all around the office, throughout the house, just a mess. And I just thought, you know what, I've got a break. Let me go through and cull the collection. And so I first went through and I picked out, well, yeah, I don't need this one. And, you know, but I maybe got rid of 100, 150 of them. And I still had about 600 more than I had space for. So then I went back through and I got a little more aggressive, and I just kind of, anything that I didn't know I wanted, you know, I got rid of, and that got rid of another few hundred, but I still had a few hundred more. Now, by this time, I was down to 48 hours to go before I had a client, you know, September 1st, client coming out to the office, you know, needed to have things in some semblance of order. And what I realized is, oh, this has been and will be a gradual process of lowering my standards, knowing that there's no way that when that client gets here on Sunday morning, that the house will be anything other than immaculate. Now, when I hear, when you hear that story, do you sense a resonance to that and your situation right now?
A resonance, yes. Clarity, not quite.
Okay, so tell me about the resonance.
Okay, it's because you have to gradually clean out today so that tomorrow you can leave the house in a way that is livable. You can't just, you know, basically you can't do a complete demolition of your home and then leave for the rest of your life tomorrow and then come back and, you know, expect to have a full home.
Okay, so let me try it a little different, because for me, there's a different resonance. And let me just point it out and you can tell me whether it's
sure,
there for you. So for me, that's a story about how the closer we get to the point where it really matters that we've got the result, the more willing we are to just do what needs to be done to get the result, and the less choosy,
okay,
and particular we are about what, how we get there.
Okay.
So what I got from you, and you can at any point correct me if I misheard you or misinterpreted you, is, okay, if it came down to it, you would do what it takes to make sure you had money coming in before you were actually in a situation where you would be homeless.
Yeah.
Now, the reason I'm putting this out there I'm asserting this as an idea, the reason that right now it's difficult for you is you still have time for it to matter which of the possible ways to make money that might be on offer for you, you would take.
Okay.
Now, that's fine. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. But the reason that you know you're going to wind up doing something is because at some point you're just going to drop that arbitrary standard, like the arbitrary standard about faithfulness or the arbitrary standard about when do you leave somebody who drinks, or the, and I don't mean arbitrary in a bad way. It's just, you know, we make it up. At some point, you're going to drop that to the point where you take what is available to you.
You know, Michael, I absolutely get the point. But here's what I've been facing, and which I guess my I don't know has come from.
Okay.
Is I'm just not getting opportunities. And I would even, it would even get as far as I would get an acceptance. And then the week after where, you know, let's say like a follow-up meeting should be happening, they don't call. I call and they say, well, you know what, we have to revoke the position so you're no longer hired. It's like I've done pretty much so much I can think of. And I'm at a point where I don't know what else and how else to do.
Mm-hmm. So when you don't know, what do you do?
I get really down on myself and I feel like a loser.
Okay. So I'm going to, can I suggest an alternate strategy?
Sure.
Because I mean, look, that's certainly, you know, a time-honored strategy. Yeah. I don't know, so I beat myself over the head with a frying pan till I feel miserable. I mean, that, you know, you're not alone in that. That's a good one. But another thing that you could do when you don't know is you could rest in it. Because that space of not knowing, there's a kind of a surrender that comes with that if we allow it.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kind of an acceptance of the fact that we don't always know what to do. And what happens is when our mind gets quiet because it's not running around trying to find an answer inside of it that isn't there yet, it opens up a connection to the larger mind, to the divine mind, to the universal mind, however you conceive of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where wisdom comes through. That's where a new idea that you haven't even thought of yet comes through. That's where you get that weird phone call out of the blue and how the hell did that happen comes through. As long as you're in your head trying to figure out something that just isn't in there. My friend Larry Crane used to use the analogy. He'd say, look, you know, if something's not in a filing cabinet, it doesn't matter how aggressively you go through that filing cabinet, you're still not going to find it. And when we stop doing that, it isn't that we're on our own. It isn't that we're, you know, we've given up. What we've actually done is we've made space for that larger mind to come through us. And that's the direction. That's the prescription. That's what to do is hang out in that. Rest in that. Allow that connection to happen and see what comes through. And I can tell you, I've been doing this for a long time. There's a lot of yellow-bellied woodpeckers out there. And but for our thinking, we would begin to hear them and see them. I hope that's helpful, Mavis.
Yeah, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. We have come towards the end of another show. So if you were on hold, I'm sorry, please call us back next week. We're going to be live for a while. We're going to get a whole, I think I got the next 8 shows without before I have to travel again. Other than, of course, out to Minneapolis on Friday night. So if you are in Central, if you want to get out there, go to 3pgc.org. Come join us at least over the weekend at the conference. I'll be doing a couple of talks and there'll be some other great speakers. You're interested in the things that we do on the show. If you haven't read The Inside Out Revolution, that's the place to start. If you've read it and you want to go deeper, check out Living from the Inside Out. You'll find all this stuff at supercoach.com. If you just want to kind of follow along, you can sign up. We have, me really. I write tips every week and share thoughts and we get a lot of there's just a lovely community there. And if you'd like to be a part of it, you can sign up there for free at supercoach.com. So thank you very much. Thank you for still being there. And I look forward to talking to you again next week. Until then, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.
Hey.